future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who win it now?
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It's the bullpen with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, myself, Brian McDonald, and our man Josh behind the glass. Didn't get to do this show last week. We all had some things going on, or at least I did. It was Mother's Day. I got a kid. I didn't want to leave the wife at home on Mother's Day for half the day to deal with an angry one-year-old. So
excuses.
Yeah, I know. Excuses.
And then I was supposed to co-host the show with Andrew Carlson, right, who normally does on Saturdays. He had bad lamb.
Another classic
excuse. So yeah, his food was poisoned, and he could not do the show. So I got to sleep in on Mother's Day.
I was about to say you got to watch F1 is what I would have assumed.
On Mother's Day, I got to sleep in.
You got the Mother's Day treat. Did someone serve you breakfast in bed, too?
No, unfortunately.
All right, that's unfortunate. So let's start off here on the Houston Astros. After spending most of April talking about what's wrong with the Astros, why are they not winning series, you know, against whoever they were facing at the time. Suddenly the Astros won 6 in a row, 9 of the last 10, both best in the MLB, and things are starting to feel good. Now, if you look at the overall, if the playoffs started now, that old trope for sports talk radio, if the playoffs started now, they would be the last wild card team. So there's obviously still a lot of work to do. You wouldn't want to go into the postseason having to play in the wild card round. But they're starting to heat up. Altuve's returned. Sean, just your overall reaction to this last week of Astros baseball and the run they've been on.
Folks, the Houston Astros are back.
Yes.
As a Texas Longhorn fan, that feels a little more hollow.
I can say the word.
You can say the word.
I can say it. I don't know about back, but they definitely have gotten some of that mojo back of the Astros that we've come to know and love the last few years, like you mentioned, with the sweep of the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, they did win the series against the White Sox.
They won the series against the White Sox, swept the Cubs, including that game. It was the final game of that series.
6-1 comeback.
6-1 comeback, walk-off from Kyle Tucker. That is the epitome of the Astros grinding out a win. That's what we're kind of used to seeing out of this team. And to see that and then have Oakland come to town and you kind of take care of business against Oakland. That is Houston Astros, 100 wins every year. That's the kind of baseball we're used to.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the feeling the Astros have been able to create for their fan base over this, you know, 6-year run going back to 2017 is like it always felt like the Astros. Yeah, it almost felt like the Astros, and obviously it's not actually true because they didn't come through and win it all in 2019 and 2021, but it always felt like the Astros, whenever there was a big moment, you always had the feeling they're going to come through almost no matter what. Kind of a crazy belief that no matter what the situation, when it came to clutch time, the Astros will come through. Has some of that feeling returned for you, RJ?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the comeback with against the Chicago Cubs, Dusty Baker already calling that so far, the biggest win of the year. It looks like a team that's starting to put it together. You're starting to get some guys back. Altuve's now back in the lineup. You know, it's still heads or tails of whether Brantley's going to be back sooner or if he's going to be back later. So
I'm going to bet on later.
I'll bet on later as well. But, you know, if he gets back, that just puts another spoke on the wheel for the Houston Astros. So for them to be clicking at the right time like this, it definitely shows that, you know, things are going in the right direction, especially after the slow start that you had here in Houston. So now it's just a matter of, you know, can you sustain this? You hope that you're going to win this series against the Oakland Athletics, and then you'll go on and get some more wins and some more comfortability under your belt, and then hopefully mesh with the young guys and the old group and make a long, sustained playoff run once we get to October.
Yeah, the Astros have a tougher opponent coming up next. Obviously, the A's are probably the worst team in baseball. If it's the Royals.
They all get tougher.
Yeah, they got the Brewers coming up next. So that's the Brewers aren't, you know, the Rays. They aren't the best team in the league, but they're a playoff caliber team. So that'll be certainly a tougher test than Oakland. But getting back to kind of the question of confidence, I think a lot of besides the pitching injuries, a lot of the questions and the concerns we had during April was just the offense outside of Yordan and Kyle Tucker struggling. And in that 6-1 comeback against the Cubs on Wednesday, Yordan went 0-5. Yep. And since that point, obviously, you have Jose Altuve back. Sean, where is your confidence right now in the offense, given what we've seen over these last 10 games?
It's still not at full, you know, capacity. I would say it's not a 10, but I am gaining some of it.
It's not all systems go.
It's not all systems go. It's not all gas, no brakes. I am slowly gaining more confidence, and part of that has to do with Alex Bregman really stepping up the last few games. Big hits against that Cubs game that I apparently cannot stop talking about. he had some big hits in that one. And really, adding Altuve to this lineup, to me, it's not just about adding Altuve, but if it's also if you can get what you've been getting out of Mauricio Dubon, or just even like, honestly, like 80% of what you've already got out of Mauricio Dubon for the rest of the year. He doesn't even have to sustain this level of performance, but if he can do that and be like the kind of the super utility, move him all around, give guys days off, let him DH, and Dubon plays the field for them. That kind of versatility and that kind of bat that the Astros basically have gotten in this injured stretch out of thin air, that to me is really what gives me more confidence, because you expect Tucker, Alvarez to keep it up. You expect Pena and Bregman to step it up, Altuve to get healthy. So it's getting the help from the others that means that gives me the confidence.
Yeah, I think it really gives length and depth to your lineup, because I think we saw sometimes, and Chaz had a nice run. There was a nice run there from Jake Myers as well at one point.
Yeah, they've shown flashes.
Yeah, they've shown flashes.
All you really need out of those guys.
Right, but I mean, I think overall, and this kind of harkens back to a time when they had a pitcher hitting, but I remember back in the day, you always feared like, okay, coming up to bat is Brad Ausmus, Adam Everett in the pitcher's spot. Yeah. We're throwing away an inning.
Three outs.
You're throwing away three innings a game, and it kind of felt like the 7-8-9 there for a little while was going through the same problem, but now, if you take Mauricio Dubon and he's getting moved down in the lineup to maybe seventh or eighth because Jose Altuve's back and hitting leadoff, you've really got a much deeper lineup that a pitching staff has to go through with less easy breaks. Mm-hmm. I mean, starting with Altuve, RJ, I mean, I think he went 0-4 in his first game back on Friday, but yesterday doubled, walked, and scored a run. I mean, are you confident Altuve can get back to classic Altuve pretty quickly?
I think it's going to take time for Jose Altuve. I think, you know, just with the age and also the attrition, of course, you know, that plays a factor into it. But there's just, you know, he just hasn't had a lot of time right now. And I hope for Houston Astros fans that they're just not expecting a lot out of him so quickly. Let him, you know, get into the groove, get into the feel of it all. And, you know, I think it's a huge, 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 you know, pump to the team that he is back in the lineup. And that he is back out there defensively for the Houston Astros. That definitely gives confidence to the team overall. But if you're expecting him to, you know, offensively be what he was last season rather quickly, I think that you're probably asking for too much. But what he did, you know, with the double, and he also walked and he also scored, I mean, it's definitely showing things in the right direction. But just don't ask for too much too quickly, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was scrolling ahead there as you're talking. We're talking about how the competition is going to get tougher with the Brewers series coming up starting Monday. I scrolled a little further ahead. Guess what the weekend series is this week from now? It's the Oakland Athletics again, so maybe not as difficult as we thought. So we got about a minute left here, but let's go ahead and break a little bit early. I want to get into some of the starting pitching we've seen from the Astros over this last week, but not really enough time to get it done here, so let's go ahead and take a quick 3-minute break. The bullpen, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald. We'll return next on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the bullpen. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, myself, Brian McDonald, our man Josh behind the glass. apologies there at the end of the last segment. I heard me choking over my cough drop as I'm trying to battle through whatever my one-year-old gave me earlier in the week. It's been a struggle. On Thursday night, guys, Sean's giving me the classic...
throwing your kid under the bus.
Yeah, I know. Hey, look, she's 1 year old. I can throw under the bus all I want. She's not going to know about this.
Two segments in a row.
Look, is there any chance my one-year-old is going to go back and find this podcast at one point? You know what, throw her under the bus? Yeah. I don't think so.
Digging through the crates? Yeah.
What, she's going to find some vinyl records? Is that what this is going to be on in 20 years? No, but I had a fever that got up to 102.8 on Thursday, so it's been a struggle these last few days, but I'm glad to be here, especially after missing last week. So let's continue the Astros conversation a little bit. If you have any thoughts on what we're talking about with the Astros, we'll get into Texans later. We have some Rockets topics coming up. If you want to talk about any of that, the HRMP listener line is 713-780-3776, so make sure to give us a call there. The Astros pitching, there's been some ups and downs. Guys like Fromber and Javier have been solid, but some of these new guys that have come up, let's start with JP France. First two starts, he looked great. He looked like, okay, maybe you've solved the problem of the depth of this rotation. And then a reality check in on Wednesday against the Cubs. He lasted just 3 2/3 inning, gave up 9 hits, 2 walks, 6 earned runs, including 3 home runs allowed. Is the confidence on JP France or just the back end of this rotation been shaken for you at all, RJ?
No, not at all. I think JP France had two great starts and then had a welcome to the MLB moment. But that's fine. You know, I think you have a guy in JP France that I think should give you some sort of confidence in what you have so far. I do believe still that the Houston Astros are going to trade for some sort of starting pitcher as we get later on into the year. But JP France has given you another guy and another gem within, you know, the Astros organization. They keep finding gems each and every year that you can now have confidence in, that if you need him to go out there and pitch and be a starting pitcher, he can fill that gap for you. And he's especially going to have to do it now with guys like Garcia out. You're still waiting on Lance McCullers. You know, Hunter Brown's probably going to be moved up to being that third guy after Javier and Fromber. So now you're looking for guys in that back half of the lineup. And I think JP France, if not solidified, has at least given you another option there for the Houston Astros. So I'm not worried. I mean, you know, you would have to expect that he's going to have a couple games like this, but I don't think it's going to be the entire year. I think he gets back to form. He said he's going to watch tape. So I'm not worried at all.
He's got to go back and look at the film.
That's what he said after the game. He said he's going to look at the film. He's going to watch his tape. And
look here, John, I got to go look back at the film. That's on me. If he said that's on me, then I'm going to have a full Gary Kubiak flashback. So I think to your point, RJ, I mean, I'm not confident they're going to go out and throw out games like JP France had in his first two outings every week. But I think he and Belak have looked good enough to where you feel comfortable that they can buy you time until either Urquidy gets back or you make the trade. On Brandon Belak, his last two outings, he's gone 5 innings in each, only 2 earned runs allowed over those two starts combined, and 13 strikeouts over those two innings. Sean, your thoughts on JP France and Brandon Belak in the state of this rotation?
Yeah, I think that they've been both pleasant surprises, even taking account France's last game out there, because again, that was his third start, and his first two were both I think he gave up 1 run in his first two starts MLB, especially going to Seattle and the performance he put out. So you're expecting some sort of backslide there. So I think both these guys are fine. You know, they're not super young like prospects, but there are young in terms of how many innings they've pitched at the major league level. So you kind of expect the ups and downs with these guys. That's what almost every team in the league has going on with their fourth and fifth starters, is they're going to be inconsistent. There's going to be some games where they just don't have it. So it's a fall from grace, I guess, or, you know, now we're seeing how the other half lives after the last couple rotations.
Yeah, just being completely blessed with the best pitching depth that anyone's ever had.
Exactly. And it took three injuries to starting pitchers to get to this point. So right. I think long term, I'm not super, super concerned. And even short term, I think just whatever good games you get out of these guys, that's kind of like a blessing. And then you expect the 3 innings, 6 earned runs kind of every fourth out.
Yeah. Do you guys feel good enough about what we've seen from France and be like then to wait until July instead of pushing the envelope and trying to make a trade quickly for a starting pitcher?
I was already kind of more patient than I think both of you guys were.
Me, I wasn't.
Yeah, and so I'm still in that mindset of just wait another month or so before you start considering making a move, because also more teams are going to be ready to sell off as they continue to struggle into July, that they'll come to a realization. They're like, oh, do we need player X? Do we need Lance Lynn? Do we need Germán Márquez or whatever? Right. Like,
well, yeah, Germán Márquez is out for the year now.
Yeah. Just as an example, those kind of guys. But yeah, I think I would have waited. And then, hey, you're also kind of waiting for guys to get healthy.
And let's talk about one of those guys, Lance McCullers Jr. He's been throwing some bullpens. It looks like he's starting to ramp up to maybe a trip out to Sugarland for a rehab. I think last year he made 4 or 5 starts in Sugarland before he got called up to the Astros in August. So, I mean, if that's the timeline, we're looking at probably at least another month before he comes up. I would still think it's probably going to end up being July.
Yeah, I would always be on the conservative side
with Lance
McCullers' injury report.
I mean, I know it's hard to have any faith in him at all, and that's kind of where I want to go with this question, Sean. Is Lance McCullers' possible return going to have any impact on how you view the Astros' need to trade for a starting pitcher, or is he just completely, icing on the cake if he comes back?
He makes it less desperate. He does make you less desperate, because you can either go 6-man rotation or, bump Belak back down or figure something out in that way. So I think that there's no way that you can add Lance McCullers, because he is talented when he's out there. It's just he's not out there as much as you want. So I think he would take the desperation down a peg, because he is a legitimate good starting major league pitcher.
RJ, where's your feeling right now with LMJ?
With Lance, listen, he's definitely going to give you another strong arm, a guy that's been there before, and Dusty likes, guys that have been there before, especially on his roster. He likes that older group. So when Lance McCullers comes back, of course you're going to see him probably be that fourth guy. Maybe I don't want to say it like this, but maybe the third guy in that rotation.
Yeah, I think Dusty's kind of trended towards trusting the veterans. Yeah. And I mean, Hunter Brown, for as good as he looked, he still only has what, like 8-9 major league career starts.
Right.
So
he's definitely going to look at the old guys. I still, at least for me, I would look for some sort of insurance policy. So that's what makes me still say you would have to go out at some point and get a starting pitcher just in case Lance McCullers, there's some sort of setback, and now the deadline is passed, and now you're wondering where do you go to, and now you're going to completely trust and put your trust and faith in the young guys. I do believe that you want veteran guys, especially in the playoffs, and maybe one or two young guys sprinkled in there. So hopefully Lance, when he's able to come back, he's able to give you just strong outing after strong outing. But if there is a setback with him, I do believe that you should go out and get some sort of starting pitching.
I mean, I wouldn't want to give up. And look, the Astros, farm system right now isn't as deep as it has been before. But I wouldn't want to go out and give like the 2-3 best names they have in the farm. But if you can get somebody on the cheap, kind of like we were talking about with Patrick Creighton's list from last week, guys like Zach Greinke, guys like Lance Lynn, people like that. If you can go out and get that name, allow JP France to be the fallback option and not have to be counted on, and be able to go into a 6-man rotation to save some innings for guys like Hunter Brown and Christian Javier, I think that would be ideal. In the last couple minutes we have here before the break, let's go into more about Jose Altuve's return. And I think kind of the question that everyone's had for Jose Altuve's return has really been a question that Dusty Baker has dealt with, even when Jose Altuve has been healthy, is, oh my God, look at Dusty's lineup. It feels like we're doing that segment every single day here on 97.5, especially on the Killer Bees. I think that's been a topic every single day. It feels like even when Jose Altuve has been healthy. And I think the big question is, Altuve's hitting first. Mm-hmm. Yordan's hitting third, and Tucker's probably hitting fifth because he doesn't like to go lefty-lefty. Do you like Bregman at 2? And is Jose Abreu, or should Jose Abreu's time in the 4 slot be done?
Yes, it should be.
Yeah,
it should, or at least for the time being.
Yeah,
he has to start slugging above like
his weight.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering what I was gonna say. He should slug above. Yes, his weight. He should start slugging a number that starts. I don't know.
At least with a three.
Yeah, I mean,
it needs to be above that.
I would want four or five.
Can we start with three at least?
So I think that having Altuve lead off. I think that's a fine thing, and I would honestly move up. It's been a big couple segments for my love for Mauricio Dubon. I think I'd bump him up to the two slot, and then you go with Alvarez, and then Bregman, then Tucker.
Yeah, I like that. And we saw, I think it was Friday, don't quote me on that, but Mauricio Dubon was getting some work before the game, fielding balls at first base. So they're at least thinking about it. I mean, Dusty... I mean, he said, like, the only way to get Jose Abreu to going is to keep playing him.
Yeah,
so he's not going to say it publicly, like, hey, he's close to being replaced. But if you're giving infield work to Mauricio Dubon before the game, before that, in spring training, Michael Brantley was getting some of that work as well. So the wheels are at least turning about what our options might be. But I like that lineup, though, with Dubon hitting after Altuve at the second hole, and then moving Bregman, because Bregman hit fourth last year.
Yeah, exactly.
So the 3-4-5 was Alvarez, Bregman, and Tucker. RJ, your thoughts on the lineup and what it should look like?
I think that the two hole is definitely just one of my bigger concerns, because Pena was hitting in that, you know, stop. It was like he was the guy that was batting second for the Houston Astros. So, you know, is it Bregman now that you move into that lineup? I mean, my ideal lineup, I do not give I don't care about going like lefty lefty. I would have Yordan and Tucker as my 3-4. I think you have options, especially with the younger guys that have played well in Corey Jolks, Mauricio Dubon. You know, where does Chaz McCormick kind of fall in all this as well? Where do you place him in the lineup? And if you're going to take Abreu out, who is going to be that guy to replace him as well? But I think the solid performances by the younger guys, as we've said here at the top of the show, I think it definitely gives you a lot of options for Dusty Baker. It's just going to be interesting, you know, what he wants to do. Right now I have Bregman playing, batting second. But I just wonder where Jeremy Pena kind of falls in all this, because he seems like he's kind of gotten lost kind of in rotation.
He's a little bit. I mean, he's been all right, but striking out too much. And Pena does bring up an interesting thought, because last year Pena was struggling a lot in that second half, but Dusty kept the faith, kept him in. And I do think he's right. The only way for Abreu to regain whatever he has left is to play him, but he doesn't have to hit fourth.
Yeah.
I think that's where we all fall.
He signed a 3-year deal. Like, you're not going to bench this guy.
Right. No.
Like, he's going to hit sixth or seventh.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have to hit fourth.
Exactly.
Yeah. And before we go to break, I just have to give a credit to RJ for his professionalism, keeping his take going despite Sean's two-hole joke. I was impressed and professional. It didn't really bother. He kept his take going. It didn't bother him all. He powered through it despite Sean's two-hole joke.
I tried.
That was very impressive, RJ. A lot of credit. All right, coming up next, the Rockets' lottery woes continue this week with their pick landing at the fourth overall selection. Who should they take at number four, or should that landing spot force them into trading the pick? That's next on the Bullpen with Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and RJ Saunders here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back inside the Bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the Bullpen. The producers here at ESPN Radio, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, myself, Brian McDonald, our man Josh behind the glass, just spent the last couple segments talking about the Astros, some of the obviously, Jose Altuve returning, some of the pitching concerns from the young guys, the lineup. If you have any thoughts on that or what we're about to talk about here with the Houston Rockets, give us a call, 713-780-3776. That's the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So, guys, let's get into the Rockets. Obviously, what we hoped for didn't come to fruition. A lot of hopes and dreams caught up with the Rockets' odds to get the number one overall pick, which was tied with two other teams for the best odds they could have. Mm-hmm. And not only did they not get the first pick, they didn't even get the consolation prize at the second pick. They fall all the way to number four. And I think if obviously if they have the number one pick, the planning out the offseason is pretty easily. You know, you draft Victor, you try to pick off a big name in free agency, whether it be Jaylen Brown through trade or whoever it might be. And you add those to the young core, and you're pretty much set and take a run at it with Ime Udoka and whatever he brings to this Houston Rockets team. But now with the number four overall pick, I think a lot more things are up in the air. With Victor and Scoot gone, RJ, who are you hoping for with the fourth overall selection at this point?
For me, and this may be out of the water because, you know, we haven't heard his name for a while. His name is coming back up in the combine. If you want to take a reach, and this is just me, this guy was supposed to be a surefire lottery pick. He found himself in a little bit of trouble brandishing a gun, left the University of Memphis, went to Central Michigan. Imani Bates would be my guy at number four.
Does he go on Instagram Live with guns?
He doesn't go on Instagram Live with guns, but he was arrested for brandishing a gun, left Penny Hardaway at Memphis, went to Central Michigan, I believe it was in Eastern Michigan, played for about a year. Look, I heard about this guy 2 years ago when I was in Jacksonville. There was a place that I was writing for at the time, wanted me to drive 6 hours to Miami to watch him at the Peach Jam because this guy is looked at the time, you know, kind of having KD's frame, KD's scoring ability. He's 6'9", but he's very, very light, about 190 pounds, so he's not really cracking 200. But from what I'm hearing, this guy at the NBA Combine is showing up and he's showing out as well. The problem is, as far as what they're saying, a couple execs are saying out there, this Ja Morant situation is going to mess him up. So because he had that, you know, that gun situation himself while he was in college, and now what's happening with Ja Morant, this is now going to be a problem. So now he probably falls into the late teens, maybe high 20s. Houston also has, you know, a pick in that range as well. And maybe
they have the 20th overall, right?
So maybe you take a chance on him there. However, if this is a guy who many believed would be a lottery pick just a couple of years ago, he reclassifies, has his trouble, goes out and he plays. And if you want to say he didn't play against Division I talent, he wasn't in a Power 5, that's fine. But I think that this guy could be a scorer for you off the bench. I don't know if you're going to, you know, get, you know, this, if you want another point guard, if we're hearing the rumors about James Harden is coming back to Houston. However, and I'll throw to this, Sam Vecenie believes, as well as many other players in the mock drafts, believes Amen Thompson is going to be the pick. And if he, as well as Jalen Green, both hit in the NBA draft, it could be something special. Here's Sam Vecenie.
I might just take Amen Thompson and pair him with Jalen Green, have the most athletic backcourt in the NBA, have a backcourt that certainly has the most. If both of those guys hit, that is the best backcourt in the NBA.
That's a take a little too far.
That's a take.
It's also like if both those guys hit,
absolute right. ceiling.
If I win the lottery, I'll be a rich man.
Yeah, right. So there's a lot that's going into this. At four, you know, I just saw a lot of Amen Thompson. You also think bring Jairus Walker home from the University of Houston.
Almost every single mock draft I've seen has Amen Thompson.
Yeah, Amen Thompson, and then you know Jairus Walker. Maybe you bring him back, University of Houston. You know, the hype would probably be there that, you know, he's a local prospect being from the University of Houston. You bring him, you know, to the Houston Rockets. But I would take a swing at it. If it were me, I'd take a swing, and Imani Bates would be my pick at four.
Would that be a trade-back scenario? Sounds like he would.
Yeah, Imani Bates is being mocked to be, like, a second-round pick.
He is. He's being mocked to be a second-round guy.
They have the 20th pick in the draft.
Absolutely. The okay. However, this was a guy just a couple of years ago that everybody was saying he is going to be a top five pick in the draft.
But you don't
then
actually
trouble hit.
But you don't have to take him at four, though.
You don't have to take him at four. I'm not saying you do, but here was a guy that everybody, well, that was touted, at least by some folks, that were saying this guy is going to be a lottery pick. I don't know, besides the gun thing and you saying that he didn't play in a Power 5 because he left Penny Hardaway, what's your reason? I haven't seen it yet. What's the reason that he's now veered off, besides those two, veered off from being a lottery pick?
All right,
and
Sean,
I feel some
team's
going to take
four?
A swing.
Number four, I think, Well, you kind of have to see how the draft goes. So I don't think you make a move before draft
obviously
night.
We're assuming Victor and Scoot go 1-2. Are we assuming Brandon Miller goes 3?
Does Scoot go number 2?
You don't think that's a lock anymore?
I think that in the NBA draft,
Of who has the number 2 overall pick,
exactly.
Is that it?
You should never draft for need. However, the Charlotte Hornets are not well run. I don't know if you've heard this.
Breaking news.
The Charlotte Hornets are not well run. They already have a point guard. They have LaMelo Ball.
Yes, they do.
I can see a situation where they talk themselves into Brandon Miller, a forward at number 2 to kind of replace Miles Bridges, who
has his own problems.
Gotten some trouble. And I could see that happening. And then with the number 3 pick, you have the Portland Trailblazers, who want to win right now, and their best player is a 6'2 point guard. And then their next best player is a 6 foot nothing shooting guard.
You're telling me something that Scoot could be there at 4.
I'm not saying that he necessarily will be there at 4, but I'm saying there's a chance, because even if Portland wants to trade out of that pick, that's probably when Scoot goes. If he falls to 3 and Portland's interested in trading out, and they can get someone, Pascal Siakam or whatever, yeah. and Toronto's first round pick, Toronto probably just take Scoot Henderson and let's Fred VanVleet go. But there is a way. I mean, the Rockets can pull a draft day like scenario where they just draft or trade up one pick. They just outbid how the Texans did with the number 3 pick.
I'm having some flashbacks
in the NFL draft.
I thought we were done with NFL draft talk. It feels like I'm being pulled right back
into
it.
But the thing is,
the
trade isn't really for Will Anderson. It's actually for Scoot Henderson, if you look at it. No, but there is a chance. And that's why the number 4 pick is, I mean, obviously, sucks.
It does.
Guess what? You'd rather be number 1. You'd rather be number 2. You'd rather be number 3. But it is a very interesting scenario, because it's also not so high up that you wouldn't trade it, say, in a Jaylen Brown trade, if his team flames out in the playoffs. Which, how are the Celtics doing right now in the playoffs? I was busy Friday night. How'd that go? Thanks for coughing.
I'm sorry, I think I just choked like they did.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I thought we were going to get a Grant Williams joke, but he just went with the choking.
Yeah, wow. So, again, there's some options here. It's a lot of, balls in play, so to speak. But I do think that if you're saying they have to stay there, they have to pick a guy, I would go with Amen Thompson.
Yeah.
He has the size. He has the highest
upside of anyone you could get there at 4 unless somebody falls.
Yeah, as of right now. Because, some of the other guys, like Cam Whitmore, Jairus Walker, who's been mentioned, there's always going to be some rising prospect as we get closer. He's been killing it in the workouts. You should see this guy when they're playing 2-on-2, in front of teams. So there is going to be some of that. But as of right now, I think I would just stick and pick with the Thompson twins.
I mean, it feels like this number 4 pick, we've kind of danced around it, but it feels like this number 4 pick kind of forces the Rockets to at least be more open to a trade.
Yeah,
I mean, unless you feel completely comfortable that Amen Thompson is the guy and you want to take a shot on him, either trading it to go get a veteran like a Jaylen Brown or to go ahead and trade up a spot. I feel like with 4-20 and some of their future
assets,
that is good
ammunition.
They could get up one spot if Scoot Henderson were to fall to 3. Are you? It sounds like you might be more comfortable, Sean, sticking with 4. I mean, is trading up because of the tier break from Victor and Scoot to what they're for, aren't you more?
There really is a top 3, and they have the 4th pick.
Yeah, exactly.
Sucks. I would actually be more comfortable trading the pick.
Yeah, where are you at with the pick, RJ?
I'm comfortable in trading it. It just depends on who. I'm kind of the mindset, do you give up the pick and maybe one more player? And you try to see what the asking price is for a Paul George or a Pascal Siakam. I mean, the Clippers, I don't know what the Clippers are at this point. I don't know if they want to kind of tear it down or give up. There's that too. If they want to give up one superstar and say, listen, we're going to start all over here just a little bit. Is Paul George available? Or are there inquiries there? Or Pascal Siakam? Or, does Boston say that they're willing to, give you Jaylen Brown for the 4 pick and then a couple more players? I'm sure Jalen Green would probably be in that scenario as well, and do you do that if you're the Houston Rockets? So again, just a lot of options there, and probably the worst luck for Houston, because you were definitely hoping if you didn't get one that you at least fall in the top 3, and now it's kind of the chips have to fall where they may with whatever decision you decide to make.
Look, if the Rockets rebuild fails, it's not going to be because they had a bunch of terrible picks. If you can't make it work with the second, third, and fourth overall pick, then you can't make it work.
Right.
But it does feel very disappointing to tank 3 years in a row and never get the pick you want.
Right.
All right, let's keep the Rockets conversation going next. Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, will join us. He's the host of Locked On Rockets. He joins the conversation here in the bullpen with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald next. Don't go anywhere. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's the Bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, myself, Brian McDonald, our man Josh behind the glass. Joining us now, someone who probably watches more basketball than anyone else we would have on this station, Jackson Gatlin, the host of Locked On Rockets, at JT Gatlin on Twitter. Jackson, thanks for joining us today here in the bullpen.
What's up, guys? Excited to be a part of the program.
All right. I'm glad to have you here as well, Jackson. Let's start with the Rockets and obviously their pick in the lottery. Not the pick they're hoping for. They get the fourth overall pick. Really, any of the 3 years they're tanking didn't get the pick that they wanted. But if you have the second, third, and fourth overall pick, I guess you can't complain too much. So going back to last year, it seems like everyone thought Jabari Smith was going first overall and the Rockets were going to end up with Paolo up until about 2 days before. What I want to ask you is, do you see any situation that could fall out like this, like that this year? Maybe with Scoot Henderson falling from two because the Hornets think they don't need a point guard. Is there any scenario where one of these prospects the Rockets would probably miss out on having the fourth overall pick could fall in surprises like last year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, this year was a top one draft, right? It was Wimby, and then he's in a tier of his own. So the real draft kind of starts at pick number two with the Charlotte Hornets. I think there are a lot of parallels you can draw from last year to this year, where last year had Jabari Smith Jr. was the consensus number one guy for so much of the draft cycle. And then, like you said, you know, a couple days before the draft and all the way up into the lead-up of the draft, right, there was all that scuttlebutt about, oh, maybe Banchero goes number one, and then that's exactly what happened. And Jabari Smith Jr. kind of fell into the laps of the Houston Rockets at pick number three. I think we could very easily see something like that happen this year. All the noise right now feels like Charlotte Hornets would go Brandon Miller number two overall at this point. And the real wild card here to me is the Portland Trailblazers with pick number three. It very much feels like they are going to try and trade that pick, which is not the right, that's not the smart basketball move. If they were a better organization, they would just deal Dame, draft the pick, and hit the reset button on the organization. But it looks like they have every intention to try and run things back with Dame again and deal that pick for an impact, you know, an impact player right now. So the real question mark is, what team or teams out there are going to be competing to try and trade for that number three overall pick? And could one of those teams maybe kind of galaxy brain things a little bit and talk themselves into, you know, an Amen Thompson or a Cam Whitmore or somebody over Scoot Henderson at that number three spot, and then Scoot Henderson kind of falls to the Rockets at number four?
And Jackson, I want to switch gears from the draft to free agency, and I'm sure you saw the. Actually, I just want to know, what was your immediate reaction when you saw Keith Pompey tweet out that James Harden is expected to return to the Rockets in the summer during free agency? What, just take me to, I don't know if you're just looking on your phone, if you got texted it. What was your reaction when that tweet dropped?
So my immediate reaction is was, oh my God, this must be new breaking news, right? I love Keith to pieces. That's my guy. He's great. But what was in that article was more or less just a rehash of all the information we've had for what feels like months at this point. And, you know, at the end of the day, the headline for the article kind of felt like there was, you know, some new significant news to drop, or there had been a new development in the Harden storyline that, you know, nobody else had heard of, and there really wasn't, unfortunately. It's just kind of one of those things where we've had a lot of this information for what feels like a few months now. Yes, there is interest on both sides. A reunion is a legitimate possibility at this point. There are a lot of things that are even, you know, that go well beyond basketball at this point for why James Harden would want a return to the Houston Rockets. But at this point, so much of it has to do with you know, whether what kind of contract you're looking at, how many years you're looking at, you know, how, what does this fit look like with this team? My reaction, you know, I've been all over the place with the Harden stuff, guys. I'm not even gonna front. When it first came out, you know, the news all the way back in December, I was vehemently against it. And then I started to warm up to the idea, thought about the pros and cons of what he could do for this Rockets young core, you know, then started thinking about some of the negatives that come along with Harden. I've gone back and forth on this thing for a while, but where I think I'm starting to settle in on things is I just don't see the fit being the best move forward for this Rockets organization, and it's almost like a Band-Aid fix in a way, and I'd rather see them spend that money elsewhere in free agency.
Jackson Gatlin, our guest host of Locked On Rockets, at JT Gatlin on Twitter. Jackson, when it comes to free agency, because it, you know, you're going to have this young core in Jabari Smith. You're also going to have Jalen Green. You'll have Tari Eason, Alperen Şengün. But you want to begin getting veteran guys around this young core. Are there veterans that you see out there in free agency that are going to become free agents that you would go after if you were, you know, in that front office of the Houston Rockets organization? Are there a couple guys out there that you feel would be a good fit for this young roster?
Oh, absolutely. And I think too, when we look at this, we need to look at it from the standpoint of, you know, we throw the terminology around all the time, veterans. You know, it's like a buzzword with, you know, across all of sports. I think what the Rockets are looking at is not necessarily like veterans in the sense of like, okay, an older, you know, 30 plus player or whatever. I think they could easily add some guys who are, I like to use the word seasoned, you know, guys who've just been around a little bit longer. They're not, you know, maybe full blown, you know, 30 plus year, you know, 10 plus year vets or anything like that. Like a Cam Johnson type from the Brooklyn Nets would be a fantastic addition to this team. He addresses a position of need at the three spot. He brings in shooting. He brings size. He's been to the finals. You know, that's the type of experience. That's the type of resume that it feels like they would look to add this summer in free agency. And there are tons of names out there like guys like Cam Johnson that you could go add. Brooke Lopez is another name that I'd absolutely be taking a real good look at because he gives them a bit of a different dimension at that five spot. Now, whether that would be signing Brooke Lopez and he comes in and takes over the starting center spot, even if it's just a, you know, a title thing, you know, moving forward, or if he comes in and he's coming off the bench behind Alperen Şengün. The whole point is it just gives you another look at how to approach things on the court, another dimension to the game that you're playing. And for me, I think they've got to really look at adding, they need a guard, they need a wing, and they need a big in this free agency. And they've got a little more than $60 million in cap space to make that happen. But if you can come away from this free agency period with those three positions kind of filled, again, like a decent combo guard, a solid wing, ideally maybe a starter, and then a big who can either start or be a backup, that would be a huge get.
Jackson Gatlin from the Locked On Rockets podcast joining us here on the Bullpen with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, and Brian McDonald. Jackson, it feels like every few years there's kind of a new model for what's working in the NBA, and this is really for any sport where it's, you know, every league's kind of a copycat league. This works, so we need that too, whether it be, well, we have to get a big three instead of just two stars, or it's a three-point revolution, or whatever it happens to be. What lessons, on that note, what lessons can we take from the Heat and Jimmy Butler? Obviously, they haven't won a title yet, but it looks like they will get to the NBA Finals, and they're constantly overperforming compared to expectations. What lessons could the Rockets take in how they approach their rebuild to what the Heat have shown us?
Coaching is vitally important, and having players who buy into their roles is equally important. One of the reasons that the Heat have been able to kind of overachieve despite a lot of the adversity that they face this year, they've just got guys who have bought into and believe in the system that Eric Spoelstra has in place there. He's easily top three coach in the NBA, if not potentially the best coach in the entire association. And it's funny because you see, even on the flip side of that series, you see how the Boston Celtics are struggling without Ime Udoka now, right? They were kind of on the ropes there for a minute in the 76ers series the previous round, and it wasn't until Joe Mazzulla went back to running the double big lineup with Rob Williams and Al Horford that Ime Udoka was running at the time that he was the Celtics head coach and kind of the lineup that he went to. It wasn't until that adjustment and leaning more into that defensive identity that they were able to finally turn that series around, and then obviously Tatum had an insane game. So that helps a little bit. But to me, I think the Rockets already kind of achieved the best case scenario that they could have this offseason, which was nailing the head coaching hire. They needed to go out and get a guy that they felt like could not only lead kind of the continued development of this young core, but also usher in the next age, what we all hope is going to be competitive Houston Rockets basketball. And to me, Ime Udoka was at the top of my list for the coaching search. He screamed, he had all the right qualities, everything you would need out of a coach to be able to accomplish both of those things. And after that happened, I didn't care about it. Like, obviously, there was, you know, a little bit of a sting of not getting the number one pick or not even getting the number two overall pick in the lottery. That hurts a little bit. They could walk away with, you know, bombing the draft, struggling in free agency, whatever. The biggest offseason addition that this team will have made was hiring Ime Udoka. So that's my takeaway.
And talking about coaching and Ime Udoka, this week there are actually two different Q&As with Jonathan Vaughn and Kelly Eco, respectively, talking to the new Rockets coach. What was the most kind of interesting or important revelation to you that we got from the new Rockets coach?
Most important revelation is that Ime Udoka is very clearly the anti-Stephen Silas. There were a handful, like at least four or five different direct quotes from those series of Q&As that you referenced with Eco and Fagan that go in direct contention with responses and answers that we have on record. We have the receipts of these from Stephen Silas just from this past season, highlighting differences in, you know, Udoka talked about not, you know, running certain players in drop coverage because it's a disadvantage to them. And then we have Stephen Silas, who was on the record saying he doesn't feel comfortable playing Alperen Şengün in anything but a drop coverage defensive scheme. We have Ime Udoka saying that he plans to utilize Alperen Şengün's passing and he wants to move Kevin Porter Jr. off the ball and capitalize with his shooting ability because he's such a great catch-and-shoot player. We never saw the Rockets really try to capitalize on any of that this past year with Stephen Silas at the helm. We even, the list kind of goes on and on, the differences between those guys. And you even had Udoka highlight that this past season, you know, looking at film, a lot of the offense boiled down to a lot of your turn, my turn, which was kind of the buzzword phrase amongst Rockets fans who were frustrated with seeing a lack of offensive hierarchy, a lack of system in place. Stephen Silas notoriously mentioned on more than one occasion that he kept the playbook really vanilla, that he kept it, you know, simple vanilla, that he didn't really want to advance to any more complicated stuff because he didn't think he wanted to keep things simple for the guys. And Udoka said in the Q&A, he's like, no, I'm not going to dumb down my plays for these guys. These are grown men. They're basketball players, and I have high expectations for them. So it's just a complete inverse in philosophy and belief systems, and I really do think this group is going to benefit greatly from it.
Real quick, before we let you go here, Jackson, the cornerstone of your franchise, Jalen Green, what's your expectations for him next season?
You know, it's tough to maybe set a baseline of expectations for him until we know kind of what the pieces around him are going to be. I think for me, he had a pretty significant jump this past season, just as far as he got a little bit more efficient. The playmaking took a leap. He had some moments defensively that looked really great. I do think that under Ime Udoka, the entire team is going to take a step forward on the defensive end. I really fully expect them to buy in to a different defensive vision for this team and really be motivated to play defense probably for the first time in a lot of their careers. And so seeing Jalen, a player who has routinely in the past talked about wanting to be a two-way force at the NBA level, wanting to be a guy who can make a difference defensively, having a coach to really encourage and empower him to do those things on the defensive side and really kind of teach him how to be an impactful player defensively, I think we might see him take a significant step forward on that side of the basketball. And then just the other stuff. You know, he's an offensive phenom. We know that he's a walking bucket. But, you know, just getting a little bit more efficient, choosing better spots, how to attack on the floor. And at the end of the day, just seeing, you know, do they lean more into Alperen Şengün's passing? Do they go out and get a legitimate point guard in free agency? Maybe they do somehow manage to bring James Harden back to town. And he's, you know, you've got James Harden setting the table for Jalen Green, very similar to how he's setting the table for Tyrese Maxey right now. It could be a really beneficial relationship, at least in the short term, to kind of aid in his development.
Jackson Gatlin from the Locked On Rockets podcast. You can find him at JT Gatlin on Twitter. Jackson, great information there. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks, Jackson. Make sure to check out his work again at JT Gatlin on Twitter. Coming up next on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 projections from CBS Sports are out for the Texans season. How many wins are they projecting, and will that be enough to keep the momentum from D'Amico and what happened on draft day going? That's next on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
97.5.